Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
All right, Tay, how are you doing?
Doing great. Easing into fall, to spooky season. I guess we are officially in it now, right?
Yeah, I think so. We started into fall, and our temperature fell today. There was cold. Rain went through and brought a cold front behind it. It was 44 degrees this morning when we got up.
Well, that's an abrupt change, but I'd be down for some of that. We're still up in the 70s and 80s up here, so I don't know. That sounds nice.
Well, yeah, I guess so. 44 is kind of cold. It's got up to 64. 64 is okay. 44 is cold. I don't like cold.
Well, I'm ready for fall anyway. I'm ready to bust out the Halloween decorations, drink a bunch of pumpkin beer and cider. You know, I was thinking about the fall spirits I like to consume and try to come up with something unique for this episode, but we've covered a lot of the things that I enjoy, I think that most people enjoy. You know, we talked about Applejack, and there's a whole episode on pumpkin stuff. If you're curious, you should check that out. But I thought we could talk about a spirit that I don't think most people are familiar with, and I associate with fall cocktails. I think it works really well in them, but is a little less known than most.
And I'll tell you the truth, it's something that I had never heard of until you brought it up. I had no idea what it was.
Yeah. Well, the spirit of interest today is Genever. That's how I was taught to pronounce it. I feel like that's sort of an English butchering of it. It's a Scandinavian spirit. It's from the Netherlands and Belgium. The pronunciation is probably more appropriately Genever. But a lot of us who have worked with it were probably introduced to it in a bit of a reductive, not quite right way. That's that it's like a Dutch gin or a malted gin. And that's sort of right, but not entirely. Gin and Genever do have some things in common. They are both, you know, usually grain-based alcoholic spirits. Both of them do utilize juniper. In fact, the name Genever comes from juniperus, which is the Latin for juniper. However, gin and Genever differ in some pretty significant ways. For starters, the fact that Genever actually predates gin. It's sort of the godfather of gin.
It was the predecessor. It came first.
Yeah. So historically, Genever dates back to the 13th century around the Netherlands and Belgium. Originally, it was made from a very rough distilled malt wine. Basically just a blend of various malted grains that were fermented and then distilled. Now, the malting is pretty key to the flavor profile of Genever. Malting being basically allowing the grains to germinate, so they start converting their starches to sugars, and that gives them a very distinct different flavor. Some nuttiness, some earthiness, some sweetness that winds up in the final spirit. Think of, you know, malting like scotch or whiskey.
Or beer.
Yeah. Now, of course, back in the 13th century, distillation was a very rough, not quite refined process. So the end result, while high octane in alcohol, was pretty rough to drink. So they would add a variety of herbs and spices to mask some of the harsher flavors. Now, they would also add those herbs and spices because we're talking Middle Ages here. This is when we believed that booze and herbs were medicine, and so this was thought to be not something you drank for enjoyment, but a restorative and healing elixir, not for getting tanked.
I'm beginning to believe that every alcoholic beverage started out as a medicine. That you'd be hard-pressed to find one that said, boy, this is good, let's have it at the next hoedown or whatever. They didn't do that. They all started out as a medicine, and they said, Well, I drink it and I feel better, so it must be good for me. Let's call it medicine.
I mean, it does make you feel better. I mean, you know, it's really not till like the turn of the century that we do away with that belief. And most spirits predate that, so I think you're right.
The apothecary is full of drinks, of alcoholic beverages.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the added layer of, we're also talking like a time period where water, like, killed you often. So, you know, you drink the water, you get sick. You drink the booze, you're healthy. It seemed restorative by comparison.
Yeah, it's just like Steve Martin when he was getting shot at and they were hitting all the oil cans. And he said, "Oh no, the guy hates cans. Get away from the cans. Get away from the cans."
Yeah, so wrong deduction there. But yeah, so medicinal in origin, as most spirits, it was sold in pharmacies and prescribed by doctors well into the late 1500s. It wasn't until the Dutch government finally caught on to its popularity in more recreational affairs that they began taxing it. That was in 1606, taxes on alcohol.
Yeah, because all the prescriptions were signed by Dr. Feelgood.
There were a lot of Dr. Feelgoods back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
If it wasn't alcohol, you were getting prescribed like cocaine and laudanum. Yeah. And it's a grand old time. Heroin, just, you know, whatever you need. Alcohol was pretty lightweight by comparison.
Well, yeah. Well, look how Coca-Cola started out.
That's true. Yeah, that had cocaine in it. So around the mid-1600s, this is when Genever would be introduced to the English and thus pave the way for gin. So we have in the 1660s the Dutch-Portuguese War, and the English fought on the side of the Dutch. And of course, while they were fighting alongside of them, they also were given plenty of Genever to enjoy, and they developed a taste for it. Now, this was compounded when in 1688, the Dutch King William of Orange invaded England and took the throne, and of course, brought a love of Genever with him, along with a lot of importing of the spirit.
Well, and the English also coined the phrase Dutch courage, because the Dutch would take a big swig of this Genever before they went into battle. Maybe a whole bottle, who knows? But that's, you know, I've heard of liquid courage. Well, the English called that Dutch courage when they're Genever drinking.
Yeah. Well, and they definitely, like, as the spirit became popular with the English, and this was aided, in fact, also by a smart move by William of Orange. He stopped the import of French brandy, so you had to develop a love for this stuff. The British started to refine it to their own liking. They got rid of the malt. They upped the botanical profile. And we're also talking about moving into an era where distilling practices are getting better. So they kind of, the two spirits sort of coexist for about a century, century and a half. As we move into like the 1800s, they have sort of developed two distinct flavor profiles and categories. So Genever, now much more malt forward, and the gin, much more botanical and herbaceous and drier.
So as the English get their country back from the Dutch, they go towards gin, and when the Dutch go back to Dutch place, then they stick with their Genever.
They keep their Genever, yeah. And like, you know, all that, the necessity to pile in a bunch of herbs and spices to mask the roughness of it is no longer needed. So, you know, the lighter infusions of botanicals in the Genever to allow the malt to shine through is one solution to that. And then the other side is just having a lighter, cleaner spirit, which is what the British embrace. Up until now, the style of Genever, there's just been this one style that's made with this malted grain. It has this malty, sweet profile. Sometimes it's aged, not all the time. But in the 1900s, we develop a significant second style to Genever. And that's because we have a lot of grain shortages during like World War I, World War II. So distillers had to come up with other fermentable sugars to sub into their Genever. So they started putting in sugar beets, potatoes, really whatever you can find to make up some of those sugars that you're lacking from your grains. And so this causes this separation into the former method, becomes defined as Oud Genever or Old Genever. And this newer kind that has different sugars in the mix becomes known as Young Genever. And so if you'll still see those words on Genever today, and you might think, oh, old is aged and young is not. It's not that. It just old is just the old style, the way we used to make it. Young is this new style that came about in the 1900s. So they both can be aged. Neither one has to be aged. It has nothing to do with how old they are, just how old the style is.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of one of those things where that was a significant period of time that we're talking about, like 40 or 50 years maybe, where they had to go with the young style because they didn't have the grains for the old style. So after that, you weren't going to put the genie back in the bottle that it was out there. So you just differentiated which style it was.
Well, and it also caught on with the rise of the popularity of vodka. This second style, this young style, was a lot lighter. It was a lot less sweet. It was a lot more similar to spirits like vodka. So it found its own audience separate that the old style didn't really appeal to. Mm-hmm. Now, those sort of separations were codified in more modern times. Unlike some spirits out there, and unlike gin, actually, Genever has a lot of rules it has to follow for how it's made. For starters, it can only be made in certain places in the world. The Netherlands, Belgium, and very specific parts of Germany and France.
Just like bourbon.
Yeah, yeah.
Bourbon has very specific rules of where it can be made, too.
Well, and by, you know, gin can be made anywhere. And gin can kind of be made from anything. The only real rule on gin is it has to have juniper in it. Any fermentable sugar, any sort of clarification or distillation method just has to have juniper. Whereas the individual styles of Genever have separate rules within them. So that Oud style or that old style of Genever, it has to have at least 15% malt wine and at most 50%, the remainder being neutral grain spirit. And that results in a sweet, malty spirit. The Young or the Young consists of at most 15% malt wine, so much less malty. The remainder can be neutral grain or it can be other sugar-based spirits, those wartime spirits. And that results in a more neutral vodka flavor. It also has to have less than 10 grams of sugar, so it's much drier. Now, since we are bringing other fermentable sugars into allowance, this does create sort of another labeling that you might see, which is Grand Genever. And if that implies that whatever style it is, it's made entirely of grain and malt. So you can have it in either style, but that just means there's no other sugar-based spirits in there. Now, lastly, we have sort of a throwback style to how Genever was originally made in the Middle Ages, and that is Korenwein. That contains up to 20 grams of sugar, much sweeter. It is at least 51% malt wine, can be up to 70. Deeply malty, deeply nutty, hard to find. But if you do find it, it's special stuff. And once again, no aging required on any of these. The older style is more traditionally aged, but any of them can be.
Now, they do have, though, in addition to that, they have the barrel-aged Genever as well, but there's not the restrictions on it like there is in bourbon about what kind of barrels or anything like that. So they have some varieties there like that. Now, sometimes to show that it's barrel aged, they will add color to it to show it kind of an amber color if it doesn't get that from the barrel.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's no, like, they don't have the rules like bourbon has of, like, no additives. There can be additives. They can add sugar. They can add infusions after the fact or during distillation. And, oak is common, but sherry barrels on Genever is not uncommon as well. So it's really, there's a lot of variance within the field.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these spirits that do have rules oftentimes control the ABV. This is not the case with Genever. The original recipes clocked in pretty high, around 50%. And there are many on the market today that are a little higher proof, but they can go down to 35%. They can be on the low end. It's an average of about 40%. So 80 proof, normal for a mixing spirit. But there's no specific rule on that. So Genever can exist anywhere within that range.
Now, to be traditional for the most part, though, it wouldn't really be a mixing spirit because in its homeland, it's normally drank straight up. It's not really used as a mixer. It's when it gets Americanized and comes here, we use all spirits as mixers. That's how we tend to want to drink our drinks instead of straight.
Well, you know, even pre-Prohibition, Geneva was in America, and yes, behind cocktail bars. You know, you'll find references to it in old American cocktail books. Of course, during Prohibition, like many spirits, it was lost to the American palate and has only returned with the revival of cocktail culture. But absolutely, in places where it's made, in the Netherlands, in Belgium, in France, it is consumed either the young one might be chilled, the old one generally not. It's room temperature, but yes, straight. In a very specific little tulip glass called a Kapstuch.
Kapstuch.
Yeah. So the way they serve it, they fill it slightly over the brim. So you have that little bit of surface tension, like forming the bubble on top. And the glass's name actually translates to headbutt. And the reason for this is it's usually served in like a beer shot combo, you know? So they line your beer up, usually a lager, behind your little tulip glass. And you're supposed to not spill it, you're supposed to bend over the little tulip glass and sip it off the top. But when you bend over, because your beer is right there, you might headbutt your beer. So it's a bit of a joke of a name.
Yeah, and they said you can wander up and down the alleys between bars and look for a Kapstuch bar. And go in there and get those. I saw some videos of it, and they all clasp their hands behind their back and lean over and sip off what they can off the top until they sip it down to where they can't reach it, and then they pick up the glass and chug the last of it, and then drink the beer after it, chase it with the beer.
Yeah. I was introduced to that at, I feel like it closed, I'm not 100% sure, but there was this great bar called Madame Geneva here in New York. And they had a whole selection of cool Genevers, and they would serve. They had a beer shot combo that was that. So you'd get your little tulip glass of Geneva, and you were expected to sip it off the bar properly with your hands behind your back.
I'd like to try that sometime. I've got to see if I have no idea if we have that around here or if I need to try to order it from somewhere or what. I've never seen it, but I've never looked for it because I didn't know it existed.
I'm not sure how I obviously I can find it in New York, but I'm not sure how widely distributed is around the country, the few brands that we have. Apparently you can also drop the Geneva into the beer. Certain parts of the world allow that. That's called a submarine, but I think the safer option to go with is to sip it politely.
A Dutch submarine.
But you know, just because it's more commonly consumed straight doesn't mean it isn't excellent to mix with. The old style in particular is the one I have the most experience with, and I think it's the one that appeals most to modern bartenders. You know, the young style has that vodka-like character, which isn't to say there's anything wrong with that, but it's the old style brings this malty nuttiness that almost feels more at home in like a whiskey drink. But then you have this added element of like the herbaceous botanical quality. So it's really unique to mix with. It really stands up in a cocktail. You can mix it against pretty aggressive spirits, definitely more aggressive than you could gin or vodka. So, you know, if you're intimidated at all by it, I think it's not any harder to mix with than gin or vodka or whiskey. But it kind of fills its own void in between these things that I think is really cool.
Well, I saw a recipe for a drink that caught my eye. The Tom Collins is a, you know, normal drink with gin, and this was a kind of a Geneva take on a Tom Collins, but it's called a Phil Collins. So the guy might have been a fan of Genesis, but I think it was because his name was Phil Duff of Old Duff Geneva.
Okay, yeah.
So I think he put his own name in there and added the Collins in and kind of had a play on words there with a Phil Collins. But it has Old Duff Geneva, fresh lemon juice, simple syrup, and club soda on top with a lemon wedge garnish. So that's a real simple drink, it seems like, to make if you had some Geneva.
Yeah, that really is just a Tom Collins with Geneva instead of gin. But yeah, you know, you can, like, it's very... I find it a very agreeable spirit. I don't think it's some of these weird ones, you know, they have some kind of aggressive characters. This is not that. It has nice maltiness, nice earthiness, nuttiness. As far as the brands we can find here in the States. Now, if you're listening to this in the Netherlands or really probably Europe as a whole, you have a lot more options.
Send me a bottle, would you?
Yeah, seriously. We only have a couple that are imported here. Big brands, you know, they're little brands find their way over. But the big names here in America are probably Bols Genever, which is a Dutch brand. They have two old style Genevers on the market. One is aged, one is unaged. They're kind of mid range, like I think like $38 to like $50. So kind of up there in prices. A little bit cheaper is Boomsma, which is also Dutch. They have a young and an old style on the market. A little bit more in like the 20s and 30s. Old Duff, as you mentioned, is an excellent brand. They specialize in very high malt percentages in the ones they have on the market. In fact, they have 100% single malt Genever. I think it's only available in the States right now, but is made in Holland. And I will say there are a couple distilleries here in the States that will make, they might call it a Dutch gin or a Genever style gin. Obviously, for legal reasons, they can't call it Genever. But like, I know Anchor had one for a while. Anchor has rebranded to Hodelin & Company, but they have a Genever-style gin that I think is still out there. I think New York Distilling Company has one that is a secret Genever. So, you know, if you know what you're looking for, there are companies that make similar products here in the States. But yeah, if you can find the real deal, I recommend it.
Yeah, I want to find the real deal. And I would think if you were going to drink a glass of gin or a glass of Genever side by side, that the Genever would be much more enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't recommend drinking gin straight. But I think, to me, Genever drinks like much more like a whiskey than a gin. And that's, I mean, to me, I always associate, I think of it as like the whiskey of the gin world, or apropos, I think of it as fall gin.
Well, maybe I should try that with my favorite whiskey sour. If I get a bottle, I could try that as a sub for the rye.
It absolutely works in a whiskey sour. I've had it before. It works in very simple sour drinks, and it also works in very simple stirred drinks. I've had like the aged Bols Genever in an old fashioned build. And it works really well. You know, it's a little lighter. It's a little bit more botanical, but it's not like a gin old-fashioned, which I'm not going to say can't work, but it works in very specific circumstances. It's a lot more of a flexible spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's Genever. Not the predecessor of gin. Little bit lost, I think, in the drinking knowledge of our country, but certainly not the rest of the world. So if you're in a country that has a bevy of Genever, I'd love to know your personal experience with it, how you like to drink it.
And, you know, I think that's interesting that there are several different ones that we've done where in their originating country, they don't think to do anything but drink it straight. Whereas when it comes over here, the first thing we do is say, what can we mix that with?
Oh, yeah, you know, I think that's the one thing that I don't want to say that Americans can lay claim to cocktailing, because as we've talked about, cocktails literally go back to antiquity. If we define cocktails as putting stuff in liquor, you know, very loosely. But when we think of like cocktail structures and, you know, mixing things, single glasses, a la minute, that's very much an American invention. So I think it makes sense. It's kind of, you know, That's what we do. Here are all of your beautifully, delicately made spirits that were designed to be sipped in beautiful glasses and respected, and we're going to just dump them in a shaker and mix them up and make something new.
Well, do you think it's a societal thing, though, where they look at you, and if you're drinking something straight, you're an alcoholic. But if you're drinking a nice mixed drink with ice and an umbrella and a wedge on the side, oh, well, he's just being social.
I mean, I don't know. When you look at the birth of like craft cocktails, like pre-prohibition cocktails, it wasn't really viewed in that way. I mean, like, you go back to like the old fashioned, they were stiff drinks, but well, that's, you get into that medicinal edge, you know, the first cocktails were medicinal in nature. So
I always think about all the old cowboy movies where they walk into the bar and they go up and say, hey, barkeep, give me a whiskey. And that's all they ever did was put the little glass out there and fill it full of whiskey. You know, you didn't see them mix up any drinks. They just poured a shot of something. Everybody sat there throwing back shots.
No, that's what you were doing in fancy bars in the big cities. I don't know. I just like to think of it. It's like, you know, America's the melting pot. It's also the cocktail tent. But not to say that most of these spirits, I mean, and definitely Genever, if you get yourself on a good bottle, get your hands on a good bottle of it, can be well respected just in a neat pour in a proper glass. You don't need to do much to it, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to make cocktails with it.
Yeah, I hope I get the chance to try that.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out how to get you a bottle for a video. We're spacing out the videos so we have a bit more time to get the things we need for them. So we'll see if we can get you some Genever in time. I think I actually have a bottle in my house, so I'll be good to go. So yeah, so over on the video, we will hopefully be able to mix up some drinks with Genever. Dad, I'm sure you can make your Phil Collins. Sounds like that's up your alley.
I'll do a Phil Collins and a headbutt.
Oh, that's just a shot and a beer. That's easy.
I know. All I need is a Genever, and I can do that.
That's okay. The hardest part of that is going to get the bottle of Genever and maybe the tulip glass.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Thank you for being here, Dad.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always educational.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our patrons in our Patreon. You are the backbone of this podcast. You are the reason we are here. If you would like to support us, you can go check that out. We send out rewards. They are coasters and stickers and bespoke videos just for our patrons. So check that out if you're interested. If you'd like to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram, and neattheboozecast@gmail.com. You can send us questions. We actually are working on a Q&A episode coming up soon. So if you have any thoughts, any questions about booze or drinking culture or what have you that have been bugging you, shoot us an email. And if you just want to talk to other people about Genever or whatever, you can check out our Facebook group.
Neat the Boozecast group. It's a page.
Dad made it. Very proud of it.
No, Mom did.
Oh, Mom made it. Okay, well,
she's like my secretary. She handles the technical things like that because I don't know how to do it. She's more thoroughly versed.
That is true. Well, Dad looks at it.
She got me off of MySpace.
You never had a MySpace.
No, it was too advanced for me.
But yes, thank you again for joining us, and I have been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Neat. Yeah, I gotta start right away just trying to find a bottle of that.
I think you'll like it. I think you'll like it a lot.
I get these emails from a place we ordered some booze from once, something that I needed, so I'll see if they can.
The good thing is, I think the one that is easiest to find is the Bowles Geneva, and I... That one I really like. It's the old style, which I think the new style is fine, but you might as well just drink like grain vodka, you know? It's the old style is really where it shines, so that's all that Bowles makes, so I think that's a good one to be able to get.
Yeah, I think Bowles was the only one available in the U.S. for a long time.
It was, yeah, they were the first on the market.